welcome to the Happy Rant Podcast. I am Ted Kluck, joined by Barnabas Piper. And Barnabas, we've got a third guy in the booth again today. And I just want to make the introductions. I'm not sure if people remember each other. His name is Ronnie Martin. Sometimes he goes by Ronald or Ron.
Hi, Ronnie.
I never go by Ron, Big T.
It's been a while since he's been on the program, so I just want to make sure, you know, there's no awkwardness here. Because, speaking of awkwardness, today is our first ever Mr. Manners episode, boys. I'm very excited. We've had a ton of listener enthusiasm for this one. They've sent in all their etiquette-related questions, and for some reason, they trust the three of us goons to suss out all things etiquette related today. So I'm stoked about that.
You know what, Ted, you just used a phrase that this is tangential and completely unrelated, but we did get a listener question. They said, you used to say flesh out and now you say suss out. Why the change?
Wow.
And you just used the phrase suss out and it, I know that we have some very, very astute listeners to notice such things.
Dude, they listen carefully. They listen and they take notes in their moleskin journals as they listen.
Yes. Can you suss this out for us? Why the change?
Flesh that out for me, Big T.
Yeah. I think at some point I just got tired of saying flesh out, you know, and I probably heard somebody say suss out and I just started using it. So
our good friend, Zach Bartles claimed that it was poached from the Gut Check podcast.
Oh, maybe it was, man. Maybe it was.
So yeah. He didn't use the term plagiarism, but it was close.
He was implying that.
Yeah, it was an implied accusation, a threatened lawsuit.
Wow, man. And this I assume was all on Twitter. Am I right?
That might have been on Facebook, but okay. You know, that's where people are
more aggressive on Facebook.
Yeah, they're a little bit more likely to threaten lawsuits and claim plagiarism on Facebook.
Which is a thing that we could talk about on our – maybe that'll come up in our Mr. Manners dealings here today on the program, boys. But in light of dealings and in light of business dealings, because first and foremost, guys, we are businessmen. This podcast is a business.
Big business.
It's big business, Pipe. It's entertainment. And you know what? It's not show friends. It's show business.
It's how we make our living. Tell the audience once and for all, Ted, this is what we do for a living.
You guys,
tell them.
This is what we do. This is all we want to do. We eat and sleep this show. And in light of that, Pipe, I want you to tell them about our sponsor for the next couple of weeks, okay?
Yes, we do have a sponsor, and that is Moody Publishers, again, coming through in the clutch for us. So they've previously sponsored with a number of books, and for today's episode,
listen to me.
What's that?
Do you know how many millions of dollars Gary Chapman and I have made for Moody Publishers?
mostly
Gary Chapman. I don't want to break down like the percentages, but
it's reminiscent of that. It's reminiscent of that Bill Winnington quote when he said he and Michael Jordan combined for 57 points.
Michael scored
55.
Yeah, I love it.
Yes, you and Gary Chapman have combined to make Moody Publishers many, many tens of dozens of millions.
I'm like Moody's Bill Winnington. Think about that.
That's, you know, Bill Winnington's a really good guy.
I just go to the fridge right now while you guys are talking about these things. Don't worry about
me. Get back to
boys.
The promo, man.
Don't worry about me. I'm just here. I know I've been gone so long, fellas, but don't worry about me. I'm right here.
You know what? How are you going to get on us talking about sports? You're the one who's always like, I can get in on sports conversations. You get offended when we like shut you out of sports conversations.
Well, you know what, guys? Ronald this was a really Ryan. Great – we're in line here, so let me just throw this out there. So I'm doing a men's conference last Saturday in Pittsburgh, and I literally get to throw out to all of these really rugged lumberjack Steel City dudes, Kent Tekovi, the fiercest sidearm in baseball history. That should impress everybody right now.
And you know what I remember about Kent Tekulve? I had a baseball card, and he had this like real floppy, like 70s or early 80s hair, and he had these like these aviator kind of glasses, but they were a little frosted, or I don't even know what the term is.
Kent was the money. Kent was a fashion icon and a sidearm.
He was a fashion icon in that Pirates hat with the horizontal stripes on it.
The square Pirates hat, which I found out they're bringing back this season. They're going old school 70s with their uniforms this season.
God bless them, man. That's a great.
Is awesome.
Are they going with the sleeveless jerseys too? So like the black underneath the gray sort of vest style jersey? Because that was a
dude. You know what? I didn't get that, but that would be awesome. And you know what would be even more awesome if the White Sox went back to that untucked jersey look they had from that era.
The White Sox also.
You guys should be literally flipping out with impressiveness right now.
Did they do a whole season in shorts?
I don't know if it was a whole season, but they definitely had shorts in their line. Yeah, they looked like a beer league softball team, and it was in the 70s.
See what I mean?
I feel like that was a Bill Veeck or Bill Veeck special.
It was.
Yeah. Guys, if you ever need to know anything about baseball, obviously you know where to go to now.
Hey, Gar, do you remember one of the first things we ever bonded over, man?
Yeah, it was.
I have a feeling it was a baseball chick flick.
No, it was the Penguin, Ron Say.
Ron Say from the L.A. Dodgers.
From the L.A. Dodgers for you in childhood, and then from the Cubs for me. Right?
Yeah.
Crazy, man. Crazy.
Gosh, I'm such a sports guy, I don't even know it.
I know.
Yeah, you're don't undersell yourself. That was
exactly
you did just pull a deep cut name out. That was impressive,
man. Barnabas, I hope you have a sports book to promo for Moody right now. I'm telling you,
I hope you do too. I hope it's Ron Say's biography.
it's called Sidearm.
Sidearm, a different
the
way.
Story of Kent Colby.
Kent Colby.
Well, actually. Sadly, not a baseball book. Still an excellent book. It's by a pastor named Chris Nye. He's the pastor of Willamette Christian Church near Portland. Pretty good sized church out there. He's a younger pastor.
Is he a hipster pipe?
You know, I didn't do a whole lot of online research into his lifestyle.
I'm going to look this up.
His authorial headshot makes him look more like a. I don't know. He looks like he's wearing like a Ralph Lauren button down, so not real hipster.
Yeah, I don't know, man. There's a little vestige of hipsterdom though in his his Twitter photo.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
If you're in Portland, can you avoid a vestige of hipsterdom?
You have to be. You have to claim. Okay, I'm on his Twitter thing, and I'm looking at. There's a guitar in the corner and the books and the hipster desk. We got a hipster.
All right.
You have to claim a vesture of hipsterdom. I like that line. We need to remember that line. A vesture of hipsterdom.
Portland should just be renamed like the Hipster Dome. I mean, it's sort of this, it's got like an aura around it. So the book is called Distant God, Why He Feels Far Away and What We Can Do About It. And it's sort of, those are sort of two halves of the book. The idea that everybody experiences feelings that God is far away from us. And so he delves into why that is. And he asks a couple really good questions, one of which is, who is the distant one? Which I think is really, in this day and age where people feel, like, we go so much on our feelings, if God feels far away, he must be far away. And so he sort of flips the question around to ask, are you far away from God, or is he far away from you, and do you have a right to kind of feel the way you do? And then the other part of the book is looking at what we can do when we have these feelings. So what are actual steps we can take? So what's the role of our devotional life, confession of sin, repentance? So real deep Christian life kinds of things. So it's not sort of a Band-Aid. It's not a feely book. It touches on spiritual disciplines. It touches on the role of emotion and prayer life and repentance and a lot of those things. And again, the name is Distant God. It's out now for Moody Publishers. We really appreciate their sponsorship. Go check this one out. He aims it specifically at younger Christians, so like the sub 35 crowd. But given the way that the book is written, I don't think I don't think it's age specific. I think that's just his congregation, and so that's sort of who he writes for. Kind of naturally. So, Distant God by Chris Nye, the hipster pastor from Portland. Go get it.
Sounds great.
It does sound great. Do you know anything about this kid? Like, big church?
I don't know much about him. I don't know much about him. Ronnie, you run across him?
No, I don't think I've ever heard of him. The concept is great, though. I think that's a guy. I'd actually like to grab that. So maybe Moody can send us a box.
Yeah, I will. I'll see if we can get some. I really liked the way that he dug into our responsibility when we feel far from God, because so often I think we just Christians in general feel like it's God's fault when he feels far away, instead of recognizing right. all of the ways that we can draw closer to God. So yeah. I like the framework. I like the way he set it up. I think it'll be a helpful book.
Yeah, good point.
Well, boys, we've got a lot of helpfulness to spread around today, hopefully via this Mr. Manners app. And I'm going to dive right in. These are all listener submitted, so they're all very good, because we have good, smart listeners. I want to talk about one that I'm sure we've all dealt with, boys, and probably you to a greater degree, Big R, in pastoral ministry. But so let's say you're conversating with someone, all right, maybe in a one-on-one context. Definitely in real life, not over technology. What do you do with your eyes, right? So here's the dilemma. If you and me are sitting in a coffee shop and you're talking, if I look right into your eyes, that seems weird. But if I gaze like off into the distance, then it seems like I'm not paying attention. Do you guys know what I'm saying?
And if you look anywhere else on the person, you run the risk of being really creepy.
Yeah. So what do you do, man? What do you do with your eyes?
So I'm going to be on the side of primarily looking in the eyes and having sort of a natural, organic sort of step away from that during certain points of the conversation. But I feel like what's weird to me is when a guy never looks you in the eye.
Okay,
that's just weird. Yeah. And then it's really weird to me when a guy looks you in the eye, and as soon as you catch his eye, he immediately looks away. So that indicates to me that there's something else going on there, right? There's a little nervousness. There's a guy, he's uncomfortable with looking at you. Maybe you're talking about a subject that's sensitive and it's causing a little bit of like shame or what have you.
Dude, now you're really going all like the Blacklist here, man, sussing out like all the nonverbals and what everything needs.
I'm trying to flesh some things out. I'm not sussing out anything. I'm fleshing out.
If he glances left, he's more likely to be dishonest. If his jaw twitches, he's clearly experiencing strong emotion.
No. I just think keeping it in the eyes, I feel like you're giving them your full attention, your respect, and it indicates that you actually care about what they're saying. Now, if you do that thing where you just fixate and you never step away, that's strange, you know. So I think there has to be a naturalness in sort of the way that you go about it. I don't know. What do you think?
Where do you land on this one, man?
I think, well, I'm interested to hear what Ronnie had to say, because he said there's sort of a natural step away.
Yeah, I wanted to push him on the step away.
What is the step away?
Okay, so the step away is that, you know, what I would say is there's like cues, right? So you're looking at somebody, they're talking to you about something that you really need to focus on, because it's required that you listen to them. And I think you look at certain times when they say something kind of funny, or there's a little bit of a break from the topic, and you can kind of put your head back and nod your head and, you know, kind of look away or laugh or chuckle, or when the conversation takes a turn into another space, to another topic. I think those are all good cues that, okay, we don't have to keep locking eyes. And then it kind of gives you sort of like your next step in the conversation. Man, I really got this thing worked out, huh, boys?
Yeah, wow, you do, man. Baby, solved. I would like to see you do this. I'd like to see this in action.
Well, guys, you know what? It's funny you say that, because I'm going to do a pre-conference for our live in Louisville thing, and it's going to be all about what you're talking about, how to look at people while you talk to them. It's going to be great.
Is it going to be in the same hipster coffee shop? And could Pipe and I, like,
absolutely.
Could we sit a table or two away, just silently kind of observing and taking notes as you do this?
Well, of course, because I've literally never had a conversation anywhere but a hipster coffee shop, so I wouldn't even know what
exactly.
To do.
You're incapable
of that.
You become mute. You become mute when you're away from it. You're in a hipster coffee shop right now, just so that you can talk.
I can't talk. Like, literally, my wife and I only talk in hipster. Like, I can't talk unless I'm in a hipster coffee
shop. Dude, you can't talk unless you've just spent $6 on a coffee and a scone.
And if I only spend $6 on a coffee and a scone, the conversation, let's be honest, is not going to be great.
It's
going to
be a short
one. I intend
to
pay a lot more than that.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Pipe, what about you, baby?
I think the extremes are very strange. No eye contact is very strange. When I first started dating my wife, she told me I was terrible at eye contact, and because I tended to just sort of look away when people talked, and she said, "You give the impression that everyone is boring to you." Now, a lot of people are boring to me, so that may have been true. But but she was right, and so I had to work on that. But I realized if all you do is stare at people, then things get really weird. So I think the answer is you make eye contact most of the time, especially when the other person is talking. When you're talking, you can glance away a little bit, you know, kind of furrow your brow, whatever. So you give the impression that you're still locked in, or give the impression. Yeah. That makes it sound dishonest. You give visible signals that you're still locked in. But if you just stare at their eyes, it's like this is a really creepy – it's like a creepy date kind of thing, which is odd in a normal conversation. So I think if you're going to look away, though, you still have to give those cues, like nodding your head or giving some sense that you're not just sort of looking over their shoulder for when do you get free from this conversation or who else walked into the room.
Right, right. Mm. Guys, here's what's key to me about the hipster coffee shop or about any coffee shop. To me, once you buy the cup of coffee, you have like something to fidget with.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like I need that. I need to be able to look at my coffee or like stir it or otherwise fidget with it, because you know, sometimes you have coffee with these guys who like they're so cheap they don't buy the coffee. You know what I mean? They just use the coffee shop as like a meeting venue. And they go in and like you've got the coffee and they're not fidgeting with anything. So they're locking in on you. Like eye contact wise. And
I never let that happen. Like that's
I never let that happen either, baby. I always buy the coffee because there's got to be equality. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. I would just go and buy them a cup of coffee and say, I don't care whether you drink it or not, but you're going to hold that cup.
Dude, you're going to hold it.
My cup.
Just walk up there and go, can I just get an empty cup so this guy has something to hold?
Cup for this guy to fidget with.
Absolutely.
So that he doesn't stare at me awkwardly.
Big Key, it's the same like when you go out to lunch with somebody and they try to say, I'm not hungry. I literally will just order them like a bowl of
soup.
What do you
mean you're not hungry?
No. We're going to eat here. We're going to eat here.
We're going to eat here because we went to a lunch place at noon.
who's not hungry at noon? And also carry a pen with you, because pens are also great. Sort of they bail you out on the fidget factor. They're fantastic. Yeah. You can sort of flip them around to give you something to look at.
Absolutely.
You know, that's genius. Just having that object to solve the awkwardness.
Did you know
I think that's good. And obviously we're going to be, you know, I'm going to be writing stuff on napkins the whole time because the ideas just, you know, keep flowing and they never stop. So that's just going to be a natural next step.
Show ideas, you know, show notes, stuff.
Absolutely.
Share with Hype and I at the production meetings. This is why I love smoking. It's why I love like smoking a cigar, a pipe, because, you know, it's kind of a conversational prop, but it's also like, you know, the thing that you can relight it. You can, you know. It just deflects the constant eye contact thing.
Something to do.
It's also why the best conversations happen when you are doing something else. You're watching a game. You're listening to music. You're driving in a car, so that both of you are paying attention elsewhere, to in some way, shape, or form. But you can talk without having to sort of lock in that strange, awkward way.
Dude, I think this is why the whole like men's discipleship in the coffee shop thing just fails so miserably most of the time. You know what I mean? It's just it's too loaded with pressure.
Yes.
It's like
we're
here and we're talking.
It feels like a job interview.
Yeah, it does. And there's a table in between us that's like 6 inches in diameter and we're basically on top of each other, and it's just weird, man. You know?
Wow. Wow.
Well, Mr. Manners has spoken.
Yeah, I just invalidated like 35 hours of your work week, man. I'm sorry. All right, boys. Let's move on to another topic. This is one that has to do with conversational dynamics too. So we'll stay in that space for a little while. What about this, man? And I know you guys deal with this, and I do too. What about texting / social media posting while with other people?
Dude, yes, that's a tricky one, man. That's something. Okay, so that's something that I think is a total, like, total taboo. I feel like that is a total no-no. So what I've had to do is I've had to literally, like, I try before I do a meeting, man, to just literally depending on the person too, because some people it doesn't really matter because they're going to kind of do that, and you have that sort of relationship, you have that thing going on between you to where you can do that and it's acceptable. But if it's somebody that typically doesn't have their phone out and you're there for, depending on the context, I mean, I just kind of tuck my phone away because I don't want them to think that they don't have my attention. Because when people do it to me, not that I typically mind, but if I'm really trying to share something with them and I feel like they're just on their phone, it's like, dude, what, I mean, like, why are we doing this?
Yeah. Pipe, what about you?
I think it's context specific. I think if there's a group of people, it's a little bit safer because, you know, there's four or five people talking. So if you're on your phone and the others are not or whatever, it's just something quick. You know, you fire off a text, you put your phone back in your pocket. If you're on your phone constantly in any context, you just look like a 12-year-old. So that's pretty dumb. But then, yeah, there's also a difference between, like, is it a quick conversation at work about something, or is it, like, back to the coffee shop that's so awkward to begin with, where Ronnie conducts all of his conversations?
Cause is it really that bad? It's a coffee shop, for crying out loud, you guys. I mean, Judas.
Coffee shops are great when I'm you know, with my wife or by myself. Other than that, they're a little bit awkward.
Carry on, Piper.
Anyway, but in like a one-on-one conversation where you're trying to talk through issues of life, then it's – I feel like you have to apologize for it. So if you get a text, you have to say something like, hey, can I get this real quick? So just sort of acknowledging that like a quick pause, let me do this real quick, especially if it's hey, this is something – this is my boss, this is my wife, this is whatever, not just sort of, hey, I'm going to check Twitter while you're talking real quick. The social media thing, I feel like that's that's just something you do if you're bored in a conversation. And so that's just an admission that the other person's not that interesting.
Except nobody knows whether you're texting or you're on Facebook. Nobody's going to know that.
But if you follow the rule of I will apologize for texting, you know, sort of the, hey, can I take care of this real quick? And with social media, you don't do that. You just sort of – you're not going to be like, hey, can I check Twitter real quick while you're pouring your heart out? because you're still just rambling.
What's crazy though is that like if you think about even just like a few minutes ago, like none of us were that easily accessed. You know what I mean? So like we could go 45 minutes or an hour to lunch and have nobody have the ability to contact us. And now because it's available, we act like it has to happen. I don't really think it does. And I think we just set ourselves up for making it that it does. So in other words, what I mean by that is people that think they can get a hold of me at any second of the day because they can will continue to do so until I like have a moment or a week or a month or I sort of reorient my lifestyle for them to understand that they can't. But yeah, if you don't do that, then yeah, if you get a hold of somebody and they don't text you back in like 4 seconds, you feel like they're dying or something, or you feel like they're being rude. When in essence, like it would be rude for me to answer you back, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do think –
dude, so
– oh, go ahead.
Tom. Go ahead, Mike.
I was going to say, I think that the dynamic that Ronnie just described has sort of turned things upside down, where the people who access you digitally are the priority over the people you're with most of the time. So if you're the phone vibrating is like the 911, you know, vibrates in your pocket, you have to check it. Whereas if you're with somebody, like they get put on hold, as opposed to the person who texted you, that text is going to be there when you're done with the conversation. And that's I think it's gotten us flipped upside down. It certainly has me. I am a slave to the vibrating telephone. So
yeah, you know what? I'm gonna play the devil's advocate a little bit here and say, for me, it totally depends on how boring the other person is.
Amen. That's absolutely true,
dude. If they're boring, I'm on my phone. You know what I mean? Like, you know what? Level up. Be more interesting. You know what I'm saying?
Barnabas, Ted's been on his phone the last 20 minutes.
You want to keep me off my phone?
I'm on my phone half of all these podcasts. So this is a group dynamic, and there's no eye contact to be made, and you can't see me. So this is why we don't do the video portion of Skype on these, because when you
among
do that,
other reasons, Jews.
Who wants to see our faces?
Our fat necks.
Well, to your point that you just made, Ted, I think it also depends on what kind of a conversation. If it's like a networking conversation, so somebody, you know, one of those people who's like, hey, I'd love to – they just sort of reach out and they're like, hey, I'd love to just sort of grab coffee with you and pick your brain about something. Mm-hmm. I don't feel a great obligation to those people to be sort of emotionally locked in. So if you know, if my phone buzzes, I'll check it, those kinds of things.
Right.
It's different than a real invested conversation or relationship.
Indeed, man. Indeed.
Yeah. So in other words, like if any one of you were sitting down with, like, say, your publisher to talk about your next book, like you're going to literally, like, just tuck your phone away. You're not even going to have that present. Right.
Oh, yeah. If there's something vested on the line, it's a pitch. I need.
Yeah. Like there's money on the line. Yeah.
Exactly. That's what I mean by vested. Then yes, the phone gets silenced and probably stuffed in a bag somewhere or left in the car or something where it is a non-entity for
it's
that.
It's not
time.
A temptation.
It's the same
because you want them to know that you're all there.
Right. Like, and if I ever get up to speak somewhere, I don't take my phone up there with me because if it buzzes in my pocket, it will completely break my train of thought. I'll wonder, like, did one of my kids get sick? Is that what this is about? And inevitably, it's like a SportsCenter notification about something, and it broke my train of thought. And what was
well, Piper? That's fascinating because I never put my phone on buzz like ever. So you just keep that thing perpetually on buzz.
Well, you don't get notifications for anything.
Yeah, but it's always I always keep my phone silent. So
well, no,
just,
I'm talking
thing.
About the vibration. Like, it's mine's silent. It's not making any noise. It just. I almost never – my ringer is almost never on, but it buzzes when a text comes through. I've turned off all notifications for, like, email.
Yeah, I just keep my buzzing off so it makes no sound, no noise, okay. No buzzing. No sound.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
That – well, there's a solution.
There you go. There you go.
And again, I think Mr. Manners has resolved the issue for our dear listeners.
Guys, you know what? We're doing a lot of good today, so you can feel good about yourselves.
Yeah, we're improving people's lives.
We are. We're changing a lot of things right now.
Touching lives, man.
The big takeaway is be less boring.
You know what? Yeah, exactly. Be less boring. You know what? Let's do one more, like, phone related one, and then we'll you know, end with some more practical ones. Here's one. Should one ever respond to a text with a phone call?
Oh, dear goodness! All things that are holy, no. Unless the text says "call me," it's an emergency.
Dude, I would agree with that, Pipe, except with the caveat, if you're over the age of 55, you can. You know what I mean? Like, sometimes I text
just because you're
folks.
Bad at texting?
Right. I text my folks. They're not great at texting, and half the time when I text them, I know they're going to call me back. You know what I mean? Because that's just how they roll. They're not going to have the long convo via text that I, you know, I'm used to having.
Which is funny. I text with my parents way more than I talk to them, and they're probably about the same age as your parents.
Scale of 1 to 10, man. 10 being amazing, 1 being unintelligible. How good is JP, our guy John Piper, at texting? What kind of a texter is he?
He's kind of an email texter. So he doesn't do any of the text shorthand. There's no abbreviations, complete sentences, proper punctuation. They're not, you know, forever long, which is, you know, that's a victory for him considering he's pretty Pauline in his sentence structure. But
right.
but yeah, it's
he's Pauline in his texting style.
But they're completely intelligible. They usually have a very, you know, he doesn't do a lot of, like, you know, you see those funny things online where, like, parents who just don't know how to text, or they don't know what JK means or LOL or whatever. Yeah. And no, he doesn't do any of that stuff anyway. So it's just kind of like getting an immediate email, except, you know, one sentence long. So it's pretty quick and easy.
I've got a two-part follow-up to that. One, does John Piper ever use emojis? And if the answer is no, what kind of emoji would he be most likely to use if he were to ever use one?
Wow, that's layered. That's a big one, Big T.
This is hard-hitting journalism right now.
It really is.
No emojis. He does text pictures. So, like, if they're traveling somewhere, he'll snap a picture. You know, like, they're going to be in Europe for the next 3 weeks, speaking at different places in Italy and Switzerland and Scandinavia and stuff.
Not on a cruise, help.
No cruises, but I'm sure that they'll get some. I'm sure that they'll get some cool sightseeing in. So he'll text pictures and things like that. But yeah, no emojis. If he was going to use an emoji, what would he use? That's a good question. I feel like he would probably stick to, like, thumbs up and thumbs down. Just the thumbs up and thumbs down. You know, if I asked him a question like, "Hey, are you free?" You know.
That's funny, man. I
on
never
this date, up. He would just thumbs up, and that would be that. I don't think he would use all the, you know, none of the faces, none of the animals, none of the symbols. He'd certainly never send a GIF. It just wouldn't happen.
Do you guys ever use emojis? What's the etiquette on like dudes and emojis? Have we talked about this?
I don't think I use them when I'm texting other dudes.
Okay.
I don't think I use them when I text anyone except my wife.
Yeah, all right. That sounds about right.
I do.
Yeah, I just do a little. I just do a little thumbs up. It just, yeah. It's just a, you know, well, that, that's
does
probably
that count?
My level.
That's just like typing K to me. Like if somebody says, "Hey, we're starting the meeting," and you send a thumbs up, that just means like got it.
It doesn't. Yeah.
But the emojis are very useful when text can regularly be misread. Like there's no emotion or tone of voice. So if you say okay. It can sound like you're being a complete jackass, or it can sound like you're being very amenable. But if you do that with, you know, a thumbs up or with anything else like that, it kind of gives it it makes it more positive.
It softens it a bit.
Yes, you're no longer a jerk. So
yeah, and that's what it does. It's really a softening agent, man. And I do, I do emojis with my daughter because I know she just thinks it's ridiculous.
That sounds like a laxative.
Oh, I'm sorry.
A softening agent.
Let me rephrase.
Big R, have you seen like the retro fax machine emoji?
No, but I wish I did. I hope I have that.
Dude, it's on the iPhone. You have it. Like I got an emoji like seminar from my niece, and she was showing me like there's a VHS tape emoji and a retro fax machine. I haven't thought of.
Dude, I'm gonna be using those like all the time right now.
Dude, they're
great. That's all I'm gonna use now.
They're amazing. Yeah, look them up.
Well, I'm on my phone now, guys. So we need to speed this thing along.
Need to be more interesting.
Yeah.
Let's talk practically about a parenting issue, and this is something that I'm sure we've all faced in our trials as parents. What is the appropriate dollar amount to spend on a gift for another kid's birthday, especially if you don't know them all that well? So maybe it's like a tangential like church relationship birthday party or maybe a kid from school or whatever. How do you deal with that, man? What's the appropriate dollar amount?
I'm never comfortable going below $10 personally.
Yeah,
okay.
I don't even think of it in terms of money as much as what will not embarrass my child to hand to that child.
Because I always think of my own embarrassment in that too.
Yes,
Greg,
well, right. Yeah. Yes, because everybody knows the parent bought the gift, but it's on the kid at the party. Like nobody wants to be the kid who brings the worst gift to a birthday party. So, like the Star Wars trend has been fantastic because you can get all sorts of great gifts for little. Like my kids get invited to little boy birthday parties and whatever. You can get like action figures or a lightsaber, and it's like $12. So it's a cool gift for relatively cheap. Like I wouldn't go over 20 unless it was like a friend of my kid. So you're talking, like 10 to $20. The problem is if they get invited to like 15 birthday parties a year because it's all their classmates, that's a freaking car payment.
It's a lot. Yeah.
Dude, it's crazy. And I mean, you get invited to these things and, you know, it's just raining toys on this kid. And, you know, he's getting stuff from his parents and his aunts and uncles too. And I don't know. I feel like the etiquette anymore should be, like we're in the card or whatever, you put no gifts. You know what I mean? Do people do that?
No, I go to parties that say no gifts, but then the problem is inevitably people take that as sort of a,
you got some overachiever, you got some mom who wants to look like a big sweetie and she brings a gift anyway, and then you look bad.
Yeah, somebody brings a gift, and so what happens is you're afraid to not bring a gift because even though it says no gifts, you know there's going to be a stack 2 miles high of gifts in the corner when you get there. Are you going to be the guy that that took the no gifts thing seriously?
Dude, you know what to me is – go ahead, Pipe.
Why do people throw birthday parties for their kids for like families they don't know? I don't get it. Like my daughter, we always do stuff with friends for our kids' birthdays, but it's like two or three friends who they actually like. Why invite the whole first grade class?
Gifts.
These kids will not remember
gifts,
each other.
Gifts.
Oh,
well, you remember each other. You're going to remember that gift. You want presents.
Well, you're going to lose half of them. I mean, the first graders break and lose everything in 48 hours. It is a racket, and it's just – I'm pretty sure it's just a popularity contest amongst parents.
Well, yeah. Okay. Presence and popularity. It's literally what rules the world. I mean, if you want to break that down, you're literally talking about the problem with the world right now.
And it's that's why people go to war. It starts with first graders and lightsabers.
Yeah. And it just gets worse. Wow. I don't know that we solved anything there, boys.
That was a rough one.
More than $20. Try not to go under 10 unless you find an awesome 20. Deal.
That's the range, 10 to 20.
Mainly find something that won't embarrass your own kid.
That's it, man. I look for the cheapest, like, whatever toy, whatever widget came from, like, the movie that just came out. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, the cheapest one that you can get without being an embarrassment. I think that's how you handle it.
And, guys, obviously, I haven't had to do that in a while, so I'm with you. I have a lot of compassion.
With us.
You guys have a long run ahead of you of those types of things, so enjoy.
True.
Well, I just
guys,
I,
let's,
at some point
let's
it gets to the point where the kid buys their own presents for their friends. Like, you want to bring a present? That's fine. You've got a job. You pay for it.
Yeah, exactly.
How much are they worth to you? They're not doing anything for me.
Boys, let's talk about one more before we wrap here. What about appropriate physical affection? So we can talk about this, but like dude on dude. We can talk about like mixed gender situations, but are we talking a hug? Handshake, high five, fist bump. What are we looking at here, man? There's a whole landmine filled, scenario.
It's a crazy one.
It's a crazy, crazy one. And one that you have to face multiple times a day, man, depending on like what your workplace is like. So how on earth do we navigate these murky waters of physical affection?
Well, I go like this. So I go, if it's a dude I know pretty well, I do the half handshake, half hug.
The bro hug.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I do that. That's pretty standard for a lot of dudes I know. If I don't know the guy very well, I just do a shake. Mm-hmm. When it comes to girls, I'm more talking about a church context right now, fellas. So with women, I just sort of let them make the move, you know.
Sure.
That's not very complimentarian of you.
It's not, but if they – yeah, I know, and it's tricky, man. But if they go in for the side hug, we'll side hug it. If they if they put the hand out, we'll shake the hand. If nothing, then nothing. You know, just try to keep it natural. But that one's I think with dudes to dudes, it's not really a big deal. I think especially as believers, it gets tricky when you're talking about, the opposite sex. I don't know.
I have a little bit of a gripe with the way a lot of guys handle the situation. Can guys just
Agreed.
Quit? Can guys just quit fist bumping?
Okay.
Like, yes. A fist bump is something you do when you come back to the dugout after you drive in a run or something, and you just like go down the line fist bumping. But like when you meet a guy, shake hands. Like stick your hand out and shake it. No, don't stick your fist out, or I'm going to shake your fist. Like this is
shake hands like a man.
Be
a grown
man.
Be a man.
I don't understand the fist bump. And if it's because you're a germaphobe, well, too bad you work at a germ-infested desk anyway, so not shaking my hand is not going to help you any.
Where did this fist bumping start, man? Well, how did we get on that?
I don't know.
People?
Sports, man. Sports. It's what I blame everything for. Sports. Fellas.
It was Kenta Colby started
it. It was Kenta Colby.
But if
it was Ron, the Penguins say.
But if sports,
these guys had a cigarette in one hand and they were fist bumping with the other in the 70s.
If sports had that much of an influence, we'd all be walking around slapping butts. Which we,
well,
I mean, I don't know what you do at Substance Church, but not in my world does that happen very often.
Oh, I just assumed everybody but me does that because I'm not a sports guy. So yeah,
in the skinny jeans, man, the butt is really. You know, I mean, it's
you didn't finish your sentence. I don't know where you're going with that.
Yeah. I mean, it's so sort of like lashed in there. Like there's nothing to even slap, you know,
yeah. It's sacred, Big T. It's that's sacred. What you're trying to say.
Yeah. Sacred. Oh, Judas.
I don't know, man. I just, yeah. The awkwardness of it. A fist bump. I don't really do well with a fist bump. It has to be a shake. Just shake my hand. I don't mind doing a full hug. I'll do a full hug. I'm good with that. I like that.
Yeah.
You know.
I just.
But Piper,
again,
you a bro hugger?
A bro hugger?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it really depends on who the other person is. I generally let the other person determine these things because I'm not really all in on physical contact. But I'm not shy away from it. But if I have a friend who, you know, they come up and they do the handshake hug thing. I'm fine with that. You know, I'm not opposed to a real hug, but I will rarely be the one who like jumps in and goes for it.
Yeah. What about the chicks, man? What's your approach there?
Pretty much what Ronnie said. Just let them be the driver on that, and because otherwise you're kind of weird and creepy. Like a dude who's like, come here for a hug. Like nobody likes that. Nobody likes that dude. And
so, guys, it's the one area where we're all egalitarian. I think that's what we're trying to say, right?
I think
there is an area where
we're
all
feminists because we say they take the lead, like they make the decisions, they know what's best.
Right.
So yes, we are all feminists when it comes to physical contact with women we are not related to.
We're just all terrified of being creepy.
But yeah,
or that's what it is. That's a good thing to be terrified about, by the way. That's a good.
That's a real good thing. I mean, it's the same reason why if I take my kids to the park and I'm sitting on the bench on the side, I make sure to talk to them like every 3 minutes so the other parents there don't think that I'm the weird, creepy guy at the park.
Just wear a shirt that says I'm their dad, Piper. I mean, come on.
You know. I usually put on a fake mustache and aviator shades too, just to
so you look like Kid Tekulve,
right. Just to spice things.
You drive up in your passenger van with no windows.
Yeah, in your conversion van from the '80s
with the curtains pulled.
Floral
curtains, exactly.
And you're in your pirate's horizontal striped hat and your aviator.
I hang a sign.
Yeah, and in a brush painting from Lord of the Rings on the side. It looks awesome, man.
Yes, I keep a sign in there that says free puppies as well.
Dude, I know we're too old to dress up for Halloween, but next year we're all going as Kent Tekulve, man. I want
guys, you know what? Our live in Louisville thing is going to be. Halloween. I think
Ooh.
That's what we're going to do at the podcast.
We need to do a Kent Tekulve ep in which we all.
Yeah, there's going to have to be some set and costume changes because Ted has already committed to go dressed as Al Mohler, bow tie and all. So
I'll do an Al Mohler show and I'll do a Kent Tekulve show.
Yeah,
wardrobe changes.
You can
guys, that's
going
to be difficult when I get Al to come and guest on the program. You know, so we're
people aren't
going to
know
out.
Who's who. Yeah. We're gonna have to do name tags so they know that he's Al Mohler and I'm me.
Right.
That's how I'm gonna look.
That's a given. Yeah. That's a given. Ted, you'll look like Al Mohler. Barnabas, you'll look like Russell Moore, and obviously I'm gonna look like Ronnie Martin because that's just what we have going on here.
Scale of 1 to 10, what are the odds we could get Kent Tekulve to come? The real Kent.
10.2.
I'm looking him up
higher,
right now.
Higher than getting Al Mohler to come.
Dude, look how muddy he looks. You know what? He's. I'm looking at his thing here. He's from Cincinnati, you guys. That's not that far from Louisville.
No, that's like two and a half hours.
Yeah, dude.
Oh, it's not even an issue. Then we're going to be able to get him for sure.
And certainly, he already knows who we are. That's almost a given, too. So
I bet he's a listener. I'm sure he's a listener.
He's probably a little embarrassed about how much we've mentioned him, but he might feel like it's a little bit of overkill. So we'll have to do sort of a solicitous, respectful invitation off the air.
We'll go.
And guys, besides Kent, I can't wait to see what kind of D-plussers and C-minuser listers we're going to be able to get for this thing.
Dude, who do you think, all kidding aside, and we'll close with this, but who do you think is the biggest like B or C-list reform celebrity we could pull for this thing?
Oh, dude.
Somebody who's going to be there. Somebody who wants, you know, they're going to be too cool to say that they want to come on, like that they want the attention, but you know they really want it. You know what I mean?
Guys, I don't have time to read my list. I mean, it's almost endless right now. I mean, endless.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like nobody from Southern, nobody on the faculty at Southern will show up. They, I feel like they would.
I wouldn't
keep
go so far with that,
really?
Piper, at all. No.
All right.
I'm thinking of two guys right now. I don't want to say their name, but I'm thinking of two guys.
For risk of
Big
ruining
R,
it.
I want you to say their name. I want you to say one of their names.
No, I will not. Baby, I'm not going to say their names. I can't go there.
Baby,
I can't
go there. I know you're not. I was just kidding. That was a rhetorical.
And this is why we did not discuss the DC Talk thing with Ronnie, because the moment it comes to calling out names, Ronnie becomes probably smarter than the other two of us, but
you guys got to understand, I would have had no hesitation saying anything against DC Talk. I mean, I was one of the, you know, I came up as part of the scene that was just doing music because there was a band named DC Talk out there, and we decided we had to offer something good. So there it is right there in the flesh.
Flesh that out a little bit or suss it out. So you mean like you needed to do music because you needed like – you needed a better alternative than what they offered? Is that what I'm understanding?
Yeah, I mean, so we were – yeah, so you know, it's the gospel Christian scene is just like the mainstream where you have like your mainstream bands that are just really uncool and, you know, everybody likes them and they're popular. And then you have, you know, the alternative side, which is just, you know, that contingent of artists that are trying to make true art. And that would have been like the side I was on. It was vehmently opposed to your DC talks and your audio adrenalines. And
on a scale,
yeah,
of 1 to 10, yeah, on a scale of 1 to 10, how pretentious is that side?
10.19.
I was gonna say this goes to 11.
This goes to
well, 11. I mean, and on the scale of pretension from that side, I would have been the 10. So you know, I'll just speak for myself.
Well, that's yeah. I don't doubt it.
That was a hot take from Ronnie.
You guys
Barton.
Don't even know what to do with that. That dude, was so much honesty. You guys that's don't even know stuff. What to do with that level.
Oh,
of honesty.
I can't make fun of somebody for being vulnerable and honest.
Yeah, wow, man. If we were conversating, I'd be like fidgeting with my coffee right now.
You would not be looking at me in the eyes, Big T.
I would not. I would absolutely not.
Just offer to pray for you and then get up and leave.
This has been a great Mr. Manners ep, and I for one am excited about I'm reinvigorated about our live taping in Louisville.
Live in Louisville.
Given that we have some direction now, some wardrobe related direction, Al Mohler Day, Kenta Culvey Day, it's going to be amazing. And guys, I hope this has been amazing for you, just sussing out all these etiquette related things for our fans. We appreciate you, listeners. We appreciate you, Kenta Culvey. And until next time, we appreciate you, Rachel the Held Evans.
Finding uplifting news in today's headlines is often like searching for a needle in a haystack. At the Story Behind podcast, we believe in the power of finding heartwarming tales and are happy to share empowering stories with you every week. Get inspired by the note a waitress received from a patron dining alone. And even hear about how one VIP passenger made a hardworking pilot get emotional before his flight. To start listening to the Story Behind podcast, visit lifeaudio.com